Now, before I begin, I should point out that Eugene has some need to leave before we may be finished.
I could stay as long as necessary.
Okay.
And today is the 30th, December 30th.
2014. We're almost ready to say goodbye to another year. And welcome
goodbye
to...
Goodbye and good riddance.
Yeah. Now, the last time Eugene and I were by ourselves, and we were talking about the period of time between the Farm Labor Organizing Conference that I was responsible for in the town of Strathmore in December of 1961, and my being fired from AWOC, which took place in April of 1962. And for several months after that event, I was at liberty, so to speak. Actually, I rather enjoyed it, because I was able to live on unemployment insurance for a time. And I had had enough of fighting with the bureaucracies at the University of California, and then the bureaucracy in the labor movement. So I was a free spirit, and I did a good deal of painting and some free writing and some making of home movies and taking it easy. But there came a time when I was beginning to run out of unemployment insurance.
Can I interject a question?
Yes, you may.
You're firing at AWOC? Do you think that was due to that one particular incident, or was there perhaps an accumulation of smaller things as well?
An accumulation.
So that was pretty inevitable.
It was absolutely inevitable. So I began to look around for something else to do that I thought might be socially useful. And there came to my attention that a fellow at the state...
Hey, we covered this last time, Henry.
Oh, we did. We talked about...
Yeah, we got as far as you're being hired as the sort of interim...
A temporary... Public health sociologist. Yeah, okay. Well, that ran out in September. And I found that all that was available in the department was a job as an associate public health analyst in a project on the subject of chronic illness and aging under the leadership of somebody named Dr. William Mandel. And I took it. And there began what I would call one of the dark ages in my career. Mandel was, he was too much. He had two or three other perfectly experienced people in the field of public health working under him. The idea, the project was to do a survey of the resources available for the aging population of the Bay Area, most of whom had chronic illnesses of one sort or another, or combination. To do a survey of what was available, and then to have a concluding section on recommendations. So we would go around and make site visits to various organizations in San Francisco and elsewhere. And then those of us under Dr. Mandel would go back and write reports on what we had seen and our opinions as to whether they might be improved in one way or another. And then he would completely rewrite them all, frequently saving not so much as a single paragraph. And so as time goes by, we all became demoralized and feeling that it wouldn't make any difference if we just goofed off. He would always end up by doing everything himself. Well, I can't say that I didn't goof off some, because I became involved in the local branch of the Socialist Party. And I undertook to write a script for a play, which I visualized might be produced over station KPFA, where I had some contacts from my farm labor days. I wrote a play called The 90 Lane Freeway, which was based on something I read in the Chronicle, which predicted that if the present curve of traffic on the Bayshore Freeway were to continue without some change taking place, within 20 years or some such figure, they would need to be a 90-lane-wide freeway in order to accommodate all the traffic. So I wrote this up as an absurdist drama. And showed it to a few people, and they all tried to say something nice about it, but I knew it was hopeless. And I tried to keep up at a distance with what was going on in the field of farm labor. AWOC still existed, of course, devoted entirely to trying to get out the vote for Governor Pat Brown in the election in November against Richard Nixon. But it had absolutely nothing to do with farm workers. They still had Norman Smith on the payroll, and Norman Smith spent every morning down on Skid Row talking with his friends in the Shape Up. But of course they didn't vote, so they didn't get involved in what was really going on under the direction of Al Green. And then, much more important as things turned out later, was Cesar Chavez, who at this time had cut his strings with the community service organization, because it was primarily considered with concerned with urban problems of police brutality and voter registration and things like that. Chavez was out on the grassroots in small house meetings organizing his independent farm workers association. And by the fall, they had in fact had a convention in Fresno at which they formalized the name of the organization and the leadership, and they even designed a flag. Black eagle on a red background. Thunderbird, I think they called it. Well, by the end of the year, the so-called Chronic Illness and Aging Project came to a merciful end and issued a report which was entirely written by Dr. Mandel. And then the rest of us looked around for something else to do. And like the others, I went from one bureau to another in the health department to see what they might have available. And there was one guy in charge of a project on health, I mean heart research. I don't know exactly the nature of the research to be done, but this guy liked the cut of my jib. And so he practically offered me a job, but I said, well, I appreciate that, but in all fairness, I've made appointments to talk to several other people. So I went to Dr. Breslow, if I remember the structure, Breslow was in fact the head of something they called the Division of Adult Health, which included the heart study, which had also included the chronic illness and aging study. And it also had, under his overall aegis, something called Farm Labor Health Services. And the immediate director of that division was a guy named Paul O'Rourke, whom I knew from our contacts in farm labor days, and I to him, and he would have been happy to have me on his staff. But he said that I should talk to his boss, Breslow, before he could make any commitments. So I went to Dr. Breslow, and Dr. Breslow had been on my advisory committee for the Bracero study at the School of Public Health. He was the only member of the advisory committee who was from outside the school. He was still, of course, in the State Department of Public Health across the street. Well, I thought that Breslow was my friend. at least so far as I knew, he had not been involved in any way in the decision to, first of all, shorten the duration of my Brasero study, and finally to trash the resulting report. Well, to my surprise and disillusionment, because I had been greatly encouraged by what I thought was Breslow's broad outlook in the field of public health, that it was going to be almost all inclusive, all social ills. But I was quite dismayed to find that he still felt that I was intemperate and reckless and lacking in judgment for having written the memo to the Friends Service Committee that got me in trouble with the university. And he said, in so many words, that he would not consider putting me on the staff of the Farm Workers Health Service project within his own division of the State Health Department, because the enemies of of the farm labor movement would find out about it and start sniping at his department. Well, that was very disillusioning indeed. I was at the point where I was willing to go back to the Bureau of Records and Statistics, where I had begun my work with the State Health Department way back in November of 1952, and where I had found it absolutely mind-deadening. And the same guy was still in charge of it who had been back in those days. And in fact, he had taken a dislike to me for reasons I never understood, and had sat for a whole year on my getting a promotion from junior public health analyst to assistant public health analyst, which ordinarily is automatic after a 6-month probationary period. But he didn't let me have it. So here I was, asking him if he had a job for me. And he said that it would be at the associate level, which was all that I could have hoped for. And I said, well, I would consider it. I was rescued by a call to see Dr. Breslow again. And Breslow didn't exactly apologize for having been so rather curt in our first meeting. But he was totally different, very amiable, and said he had a job for me in the field of medical care research. And that was significant in two ways. One, in fact, my degree from the School of Public Health had been in public health and medical care administration. And secondly, it signified the fact that Breslow himself was very interested in getting the State Department of Public Health more involved in studying the field of health care. In the past, there had been something close to a firewall between public health and medical care. If the public health department had dared to suggest that it might have anything to do with the way medicine was practiced, it would have been taken by the American Medical or the California Medical Association as evidence that the department was advocating socialized medicine. So they didn't dare touch it. They didn't dare even use the term.
So the
healthcare
staff. Public health department had to stay away from medical care.
Yeah, all they could do. Well, they could investigate sewage disposal plants. They could give advice to pregnant women to drink orange juice and things of that sort.
Food safety.
There are various things they could do. And they did all right in that limited area. But Breslow was always looking for ways to think outside the box and call it by different names. So it seems that he had some money to do a study in Santa Cruz County of persons who were 65 years of age and over, and this study was for the purpose of ascertaining how much they had to spend for their health care out of pocket. There were various programs operated by social welfare departments and others, whereby in theory they could go to county hospitals and so the purpose of this study was to find out how much they were in fact getting paid from other sources. There were, of course, at that time still some health insurance plans available to those who could afford it, although it was nowhere near as extensive as it later became. a lot of people were simply having to pay out of their pocket or going without care entirely. So anyway, it wasn't going to be addressed to the question of whether they were dying prematurely from the fact they were having to pay out of pocket or anything judgmental of that sort. It was supposed to be a totally objective study, and it had already been begun a year or two before I had this talk with Breslow. But it seems that the project had run out of funding, and he had just obtained enough funds to finish it up. So what it consisted of was having me make sense out of the data that had already been collected by others and to write up the final report. Well, I thought that was a worthy challenge, and I accepted it with pleasure. And Breslow dropped the broad hint that he was working on the possibility of this leading to other studies in the field of healthcare. Particularly if Governor Brown were reelected rather than being replaced by Richard Nixon. So, I embarked on that project in January of 1963.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
What for? What? They had computers back then, right?
They were starting to.
So, what form was this data in? Was it just written on paper?
Oh, it would. I can't. It was a grab bag. There were some. I guess there were some official sources from hospitals.
But if you wanted to do
and
some,
there might possibly have been some survey type interviews with recipients, questionnaires, standardized questionnaires, that sort of thing. Yeah, go on.
Well, if you wanted to do something like find the correlations between variables. How would you have to do that manually with adding machines, or were there computer systems that could do the statistics for you?
I'm not sure they were that far advanced yet. This, I don't recall that our final report had any coefficients of correlation.
Okay.
Now, as I indicated, my interest in farm labor was always in the background. And along about March, guess it was. Well, among other things, an organization called the Emergency Committee to Aid Farm Workers or Farm Labor, can't remember exactly the name of it, an organization in Los Angeles had received a $50,000 grant from somebody or other to lobby on behalf of farm workers, and specifically to lobby Congress on the subject of Public Law 78, which was the enabling legislation for the Bracero program. Because once again, Public Law 78 was coming up for revisiting by Congress. It had to be refunded every couple of years. And this was one such year. There were going to have to be a series of congressional hearings, and it would have to end up with both houses voting up or down on PL 78, and if it were to be voted up, how long would it be extended, and how much would it be funded, and so forth. So the emergency committee down in Los Angeles had this money, $50,000, to lobby against the extension of Public Law 78. Well, I had thought long and hard and deeply about the Bracero program, and I had jotted down some of my ideas here and there as time went by. Of course, I had written this long tome, which had never seen the light of day, but I also had some shorter pieces here and there. So I conceived the idea of pulling my thoughts together in a booklet. Which would be overall an indictment of the Bracero program. And I started writing on that in my spare time from writing the Santa Cruz report. And somehow or other, I worked them both in. During the months of March and April, by the end of April, I had finished, and I dated the finished monograph, which I called Fields of Bondage. I dated it May 1st. I had a certain fondness for dating things with some significant date, such as my big Bracero study. I dated December 14th of 1959. I guess I'm the only one who ever read it that knew that was a significant date for me. And May 1st is significant for those in the labor movement. It's sometimes called the International Labor Day because it is recognized as such in every other civilized country of the world. The U.S. is the only one that has its own Labor Day, as far as I know. Now, I was able to get this, it's about 100 pages long. And I was able to get it multi-lift, which is a method of reproduction much, much superior to mimeographing, as you may possibly remember back from those days. Maybe you don't. It's pretty good stuff. And as it happened, I knew somebody who knew how to operate a multi-lift machine and had access to one. Because at the time, that was her job. And that person was none other than my great and good friend, Ellen, whom I have mentioned as being one of the reasons why I was fired from AWOC, although by no means the only one. By this time, my personal relationship with Ellen was no longer so great as it had been. But we were still good friends. In short, we weren't living together. But I provided the paper, and she turned out 150 copies of this monograph, which were bound. With glue binding.
A very primitive form of Powis Parker.
It was pretty good looking, and it held up pretty well.
Where did she work exactly?
Well,
at a printer's?
No, there was a publication called the Liberal Democrat on Bancroft Way, which had the equipment. And the owner and operator of that was sympathetic to the purpose of our using the equipment at night. So, I sent copies of that to keep people in Washington, D.C., particularly in the House of Representatives, where I thought the best chances were of getting Public Law 78 voted down. And in particular, one of the members of the House named Jack Shelley, who had been the head of the California State Federation of Labor before he was elected to Congress. He later became mayor of San Francisco. He was a good liberal Democrat. So I sent him a copy of this booklet, and I got from him a reply that he liked it so much that he wanted to share it with some of his colleagues, and could I send him another two or three copies? Which, of course, I was delighted to do. It seems that the House was going to be taking up a vote later in the month of June, and he felt that this booklet could sway some votes. So I waited until I learned the results of the vote, and by golly, for the first time in its history, it had first been voted into effect in 1951. For the first time in its 12-year history, it was voted down.
I thought it was started in World War II.
That was the Bracero program in a different version.
Okay.
51 was the one that I studied, and that in some ways it was even better than the anarchy of the earlier version, but in some ways it was worse. In any case, and this will be the end of my peroration for the day, I felt once again in the course of my checkered career that I had been of some effect. I don't have any idea how many votes I may have influenced, but I like to think that I did some good. So endeth the sermon for today. Okay.
One question. Was that monograph ever published elsewhere?
No.
What was it called again?
Fields of Bondage.
Now, when I Google your, when I search for your name on Amazon,
you wouldn't find it.
Two publications come up.
Yeah.
So Shall You Reap and something else. I guess it wasn't Fields of Bondage, though.
No, it wouldn't be there. It is a true collector's item.
You have a copy. You have a copy.
Oh, I've got a copy or two. I guess I neglected to send two copies, is what you have to do, to the Library of Congress. So they probably don't have it. Maybe it's not too late. Some of it is pretty interesting reading. Some of it is actually almost humorous in a satirical way. If